Good afternoon, everyone. So again, I'm Kiana Anthony. I'm a nurse practitioner at Philadelphia Department of Public Health, Health Center Number 1. And I'll be talking to you about integrating PrEP for HIV into a categorical STD clinic within a high-risk urban setting. So we're just going to jump right into HIV in Philadelphia. And all of this data is taken from ACO, the AIDS Activities Coordinating Office's 2014 surveillance report. And ACO is the HIV/AIDS surveillance arm of Philly's Department of Public Health. So in 2014, we had 624 newly diagnosed HIV cases. And we know that and 90% the mode of transmission was sexual intercourse. So there's estimated that 299 of these cases were new incidents, new HIV infections. And we know that in Philly, our incident rate is about 2 times that of the national rate. And we have an increase in males, blacks, ages 13 to 24, and those who are MSM. So at the Department of Public Health in Philadelphia's Health Center 1, we are a free categorical walk-in STD site. We do testing and treatment. We see over 20,000 visits a year. And in 2014, we had 60 new HIV infections. 17 of those had had a negative test within the 2 years prior to seroconverting. And a majority were young MSM of color. So in preparation, we started about a year of preparation, and it was a lot of new logistical tools for us because, again, we're a walk-in clinic, so we had done no scheduling in the past. We're free, so we don't bill for any of our services or labs or medication. And then the continuity of care, we really have no follow-up services. So all of our staff were trained in PrEP awareness, and then we also establish relationships with other PrEP providers in the city, just kind of getting an idea of how they were running their PrEP programs. We then established our own PrEP protocol. We really followed the CDC guidelines and then made it, you know, very specific to our clinic. And then the signage on this slide, we placed in every room, every exam room, as well as all throughout the waiting area and the phlebotomy rooms to really prompt patients to start inquiring about PrEP. So we want to keep our criteria pretty open. They had to be HIV negative, 18 years or older, and just interested in PrEP. And although we want to keep that criteria pretty open, we did want to target specific high-risk groups. So we were looking at those with a positive rectal gonorrhea or chlamydia, new syphilis cases, MSM with multiple partners or meeting anonymous partners, the negative partner in a discordant relationship, and then those engaging in transactional sex. So we started August 15th of last year, and for the sake of this presentation, we stopped our numbers at July 31st of this year. And at that point, we had enrolled 98 PrEP participants. 80% of our PrEP participants were men who had sex with men, and then another 12% were men who had sex with both men and women. So 92% of our patient population for PrEP are men who are engaging in sex with men. And then 19 patients in particular were young MSM of color. So we actually were pretty surprised when starting enrollment that 70% of our patients were privately insured. We know that everyone takes advantage of the free clinic, but a lot more than we had suspected were privately insured. But we do know that not all insurance is created equal. We have patients who have no copay all the way up to $1,700 for their monthly dosage of Truvada. And then, you know, insurance is always changing. At each visit, we're seeing that there could be a different insurance status just because of losing employment, losing insurance. And then our other 30% were enrolled into the Gilead Patient Assistance Program, where we get the Truvada delivered straight from Gilead. So in the beginning, we had about a 50% show rate for our first visit. In response, we really wanted to up that number. So we shortened the time interval from the time of their referral to the initial PrEP appointment. If it was possible, we made it the same day. But typically, we got it down to within a week after referral. We also gave them direct access to our staff by having a cellular phone that they can text or call throughout our workday with questions or concerns, moving their scheduling around. And then we also increased our PrEP availability. We moved from just a couple of hours one day a week to now doing two full days a week well into the evening hours. So as of July 31st, we had 28% of our patients were inactive. So 27 had stopped PrEP with us for various reasons. Some moved away, some switched to the primary providers. We had 13 who we just lost to follow-up after their first or second visit. And then we had 3 who were no longer eligible, which we'll talk about in a couple of slides. So we wanted to look at STD occurrence after our patients had started PrEP. And we found that we had 4 new rectal gonorrhea and chlamydia cases in patients after they had begun PrEP. And then we had 5 new syphilis diagnoses. 4 were secondary and 1 was early latent. So it clearly just indicates that our patients are still engaging in high-risk sexual activity, and there's such a need for PrEP with our patient population. So we have had 2 acute HIV infections with PrEP patients post-starting. One patient there were some adherence problems, and the other there were huge insurance barriers. Both patients had tested negative with a 4th generation rapid in June of this year, and by July they had seroconverted. One in particular was a patient who actually started with a private doctor. He had private insurance and lost his insurance, and then went probably about 2 months without PrEP and then found us and saw that he could do it with us for free. So it took us about a month from June to July to get all his paperwork in order and get him the meds, and then by the time he came back in to pick up his first bottle, he had seroconverted. So it really was a shame because insurance was such a barrier for him, because this was a guy who was really trying to use PrEP as a risk reduction tool. And then we also have one unknown. We had a patient where at the time we didn't have any rapid kits, so we had to send off his 4th generation HIV test, which was positive, and then his confirmatory test was negative. So we tried multiple times to get him back in for the recommended NAT testing, and then eventually we were unable to locate him. So at this point, we still don't know what that patient's status is. So reported barriers. We know that lack of knowledge is a big one, not only among patients, just not knowing enough about PrEP, but also providers. We have a lot of patients who come to us who tell us that, you know, their primary provider or another provider just wasn't comfortable, didn't know enough about it, or weren't doing PrEP. And then the stigma, you know, there's always this stigma coming from outside of the MSM community, but also with PrEP, we see it within. You know, you hear the verbiage of the Truvada whore, and what does it mean if a person is on Truvada? And then, of course, insurance is such a big barrier. These who are underinsured and they have these astronomical copays, and then even, you know, the Gilead program is great, but there's a lot of kind of hoops to jump through, and it can take some time to get patients their medication. So we're not quite sure if these barriers are a direct reason why we have such a low enrollment of young MSM of color, even though we know that they're at the highest risk. But we know this is something that we need improvement in, and we are working on it. So what we have done to increase our PrEP enrollment is we've linked up with DIS for referrals, so all positive or contacts to syphilis, positive rectal gonorrhea or chlamydia, and those who are contact to HRV are referred for PrEP, and if they're a good candidate, we get them enrolled. Also, patients who come to us for post-exposure prophylaxis, once they're done with their regimen, we try to streamline them into our PrEP program if they're a good candidate. We've been added to a PrEP provider list, which we were a little reluctant to do in the beginning, but now that we're comfortable with our PrEP program, it's been going for a little over a year now, we've been added to that list to bring on more patients. And then we also have now the doyouphilly.org site, which is a great site that's directed towards young MSM of color and getting them really great health information, as well as different means of testing and also information on PrEP. So, of course, we have knowledge gaps. We're continuously learning. At this point, we don't know the number of patients who are referred, but just state that they're not interested at the time. You know, it's documented in the chart, but we don't have a mechanism to really capture the number and see how many there are. We don't know why the most high-risk people refuse. We don't know if some have actually told us that they think it's a mechanism to harm the gay community. Others are just young and they think they're invincible, but we don't know why the most high-risk tend to refuse the most. And then we also don't know the outcome of those who stopped. So we have those 13 who were unable to locate, especially. We don't know what their risk factors are at this point. So our next steps, I mean, we've prepared, we've implemented, and going forward, we are increasing our clinicians. We started with just myself and our medical director, Dr. Lenore Asbell. And now we have one other physician who is doing PrEP, and we are training 2 more nurse practitioners. And then finally, we're moving to a web-based electronic medical record, which would just help us run a very much more efficient program to better serve our patients. So I just want to acknowledge Dr. Carolyn Johnson, who's our director and the acting deputy health commissioner, and Coleman Terrell, who's the director of ACO, and of course, Health Center No. 1 staff, who've been so great at being flexible and becoming great advocates for PrEP. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Kiana. Thank you, audience. Do we have any questions? While people approach the microphone, I'll ask a quick question. And I think I neglected to introduce myself at the beginning, but I'm Stephanie Cohen. I'm the medical director at San Francisco City Clinic with SFDPH. So, Kiana, one issue that some STD clinics face in bringing on PrEP is offering creatinine and Hep B testing as things they may not have had previously. How did you guys deal with that, and how did you deal with the payment for that?
So we are, they're using the same payment streamlines from our STD program. So we do the hepatitis testing at their initial baseline testing, and then the creatinine at the 1 month visit, and then all the 3 month follow up visits. But we were able to get that through the Philadelphia Department Public Health Lab. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Okay. Yeah, hi, it's Arlene Sainet from University of North Carolina. Thank you for a nice talk, and obviously you've been very successful with your great fan base here. But I wanted to find out if you've thought about doing any kind of like PrEP navigation, or I mean, clearly it sounds like you have a 70% who are actually maybe maintained on PrEP. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about other strategies like that to improve your numbers?
So yeah, I mean, we're always looking at ways to improve our numbers. Like I said, we have the Do You Philly site, which is a great additional tool that's very new, just launched, I believe, in July of this year. And then we've just started this summer also linking up with DIS. So those are our two very new mechanisms to try to bring in new people and help with the continuity of care. But we also have our social workers. We're lucky to have social workers on staff at the STD program, and they are really, really great at following up with patients. They can be a little nagging, but they follow with patients nonstop to get them in and help them with scheduling. So we have that tool as well.
Thank you for the excellent presentation. I am Kerunisa from Tanzania, currently a Humphrey Fellow at Emory University. My question is, how are you measuring the adherence to Truvada? I see you only have one loss to follow up. The rest are still in the program. Back home, we have a big challenge as far as adherence and patient disappearing from our clinics.
Mm-hmm. So we have 28% who we've lost. We're just looking at adherence at this point, just through interview when we see them at their 1 month and then their subsequent 3 month visits. Asking, you know, just questioning the patients about how many pills have they missed since their last visit. That's the extent of how we're following up adherence. We're not doing any, like, blood levels or anything of that nature.
Hi, Chris Reed, Orange County. I have a question about you excluded those who are under 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, is it a state-by-state issue? Is there some overarching legal reason why we can't give it to those under 18?
Yeah, so, I mean, with the health department, the STD department, they just made that conscious decision just because we know that PrEP is only FDA approved for those 18 and older, Truvada as PrEP. We do have an excellent program in Philadelphia called YHEP who do see teens for PrEP. So we typically still refer to YHEP for our patients who are under the age of 18.
Hi, that was excellent, Kiana. I'm Ina Park from California Department of Public Health. And question for you, sort of one of the challenges that I face is trying to figure out which women should be referred for PrEP, and I'm wondering what kind of criteria you guys used. I noticed that you had transactional sex down there, but I'm just wondering if there were other criteria for women.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. So everyone who we see at our clinic is there typically for a high-risk reason, right? So we can't refer PrEP to every single person. We have really been pinpointing those who engage in transactional sex. And I can tell you that out of the three women that we have right now, one engages in transactional sex and intermittent IV drug use.
Yeah.
The other is in a serodisconcordant relationship. And the other actually isn't that high risk. I mean, she has about three sexual partners that she just wanted to have this as a risk reduction tool for herself.
Yeah, and so I think if somebody were to come, like if you have people that are more of the worried well or slightly lower mm-hmm. risk, but they're coming to you and they strongly want it, you guys are not necessarily opposed to starting.
Definitely not opposed.
People.
We sit down and we really talk with them if this is the right decision for them or if we can implement another risk reduction plan. So that's what we typically do.
And there are any of your like sort of promotional materials that you have up in clinic, are they geared towards women at all or are they primarily directed towards
They're
men?
They're not geared
men.
Towards women.
Yeah.
So that is something that we've been in the talks about at, you know, prompting more women to inquire about PrEP.
Yeah.
Ken, I have one other question for you. Just having heard Gretchen's talk and knowing that from the NACHO survey, really very few STD clinics are actually offering PrEP, what do you think were the key factors that allowed your STD clinic to bring on PrEP?
I think we kind of saw the trends. So we saw many patients who would come in and they would have a rectal gonorrhea, and then 6 months later with secondary syphilis, and then they would seroconvert to HIV positive. So seeing that trend ongoing, especially in our young MSM of color, I think was the final push to really implement PrEP at our health center.
Interesting. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.